Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Dad Advice Project, Words of Wisdom from Guys Who Love Being Dads, by Craig Kessler. Narrated by Mike Lenz. How the Dad Advice Project Came to Be. In May of 2019, inspired by a letter that a mentor's father had written to him, I asked a few friends to write me a note on how to be a good dad. Unsure what to expect, the responses I received were remarkable. The notes ranged from David Letterman-style top 10 lists that were funny yet thoughtful to letters my friends had written to their children. In total, the five or so notes that my friends created, along with an unproductive online search in pursuit of dad tips, helped me recognize a few things. One, moms have endless content on how to be better moms, but the content available for dads is thin. Two, parenting is a humbling journey, and while most dads begin their journey with the goal of being great, there's no manual to help us get there. Three, most dads in my friend group agree that fatherhood is the ride of a lifetime, yet we often find ourselves flying blind with very little pattern recognition to help us navigate whatever comes our way. As COVID hit in March of 2020, I started telling friends and work colleagues about the dad advice submissions that I'd gathered in 2019. Everyone asked if they could read the advice. "I'd love to share with you, but I haven't asked the authors for permission," was my standard reply. As the coronavirus continued to turn normal life upside down, and as my wife and I, like so many other families, navigated parenting our 1, 3, and 5-year-old boys, the dad advice submissions began to pick up steam. Friends from different parts of my life found themselves more reflective than ever before, and thankfully willing to put their thoughts about fatherhood down on paper. And so, the Dad Advice Project was born. My hope is that this collection of stories and advice, all put together by real dads, who I am proud to call friends, will help you navigate fatherhood. And, if successful, perhaps these words of wisdom will help our kids live better lives. What to expect? The book is ordered with the most tenured dads, and in some cases granddads, at the front, with the newer dads following. My background. Born and raised in San Diego, I attended Georgetown University before starting a career in business. I spent the early years of my career working in consulting and private equity. After marrying my high school girlfriend, I attended Harvard Business School. Several years after school, I was offered the chance of a lifetime to help lead a business called Topgolf. At the time, I was 31 years old. With a bit of luck and a series of incredible mentors, I was off to the races helping to lead a growing entertainment company. And as Topgolf grew from 5,000 associates to 20,000, two things happened. First, my wife and I had three children, all boys, and all within 4 years. I realized early on that I was clueless when it came to raising our kids. Second, I met and stayed in touch with remarkable people, many of them older than me, who were willing to share tips and tricks about fatherhood. This book captures so much of what I've learned from these great people. Craig Kessler. Forward. George Tenet. Children, 33-year-old son. Career, chairman of Allen & Company, LLC, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency. I had the privilege of teaching Craig Kessler in 2006 at Georgetown University's Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service. He was among 18 students in a seminar called Intelligence in Practice. When I thought about what I wanted to achieve in the classroom, I reverted to some timeless values that I had learned from my father: the setting of high standards, reward for effort, a focus on intellectual curiosity, getting to know each student personally in order to find out how I could help them get better rather than focusing on how to get a better grade. How could I get them to listen to each other with respect and kindness and absorb opposing points of view? It was a tough class, intended to get men and women ready for the real world of work. Much was expected of the students. The readings were unreasonably long, the grading hard, There was an emphasis on learning how to precisely use words to communicate thoughts on paper and orally. At the same time, we made time for students, listened to their needs, helped them recognize their true potential, laughed a lot, and gave them a sense that the classroom was a home they would want to return to each Monday morning. Years later, I was in Augusta, Georgia, privileged to be watching the Masters tournament. I was standing greenside by the par 5 second hole. We were awaiting the arrival of the next foursome. All of a sudden, off in the distance, I heard someone yelling at the top of his lungs, "Professor Tennant!" numerous times. Yelling at the top of one's lungs is, to put it mildly, frowned upon at Augusta National. It took me a moment to recognize that I was the object of one of my academic children who had grown up. It was the exuberant, delightful Craig Kessler. I remember him sitting in class, eyes wide open, enthusiastically absorbing everything that was going on. He was energetic and whip-smart. As he arrived greenside, we embraced. He told me all that he had done in his still very young life. I was so very proud. His one lament, said to me with a twinkle in his eye, was that I had only given him a B+. I remember telling him that despite my affection for him, he got the grade that he deserved, and we both laughed. Craig and I have stayed in close touch ever since that day, and when he asked me to write the foreword to this book, it gave me the chance to reflect on my dad. I recognized that my dad had laid the foundation for everything I had tried to do in my life, whether in attempting to teach young men and women how to think, in running a large government organization, or in helping to lead an investment bank. From my dad, I learned to always show care and respect for people, to always care for them and give them the confidence that, with effort, they could always get better. I learned the importance of giving of myself, not only to discuss papers or important issues of the day, but to also listen to their problems and guide them through a process of honest introspection to help them make better decisions. Prior to teaching, my career in public service had led me to become Director of Central Intelligence. One of the greatest sorrows of my life was that my dad had not lived long enough to see me get there. I have met kings, presidents, prime ministers, and generals, yet none of them measured up to my dad. John Tennant left his home in northern Greece when he was 12 and landed in France, where he became a coal miner for 6 years. He emigrated to the United States at the age of 18 without a nickel in his pocket or any family nearby. He went into the restaurant business. He had a third-grade education at best, and yet devoured books, newspapers, and all things related to history and politics. He loved unconditionally, listened patiently, never raised his voice, adored and respected my mother, and never spoke a bad word about anyone ever. His dry sense of humor filled our home with laughter. All Dad ever asked was for maximum effort. If you had done your best, he would accept the outcome and throw his arms around you. The worst words that ever came out of his mouth were, "I am disappointed in you." These words were crushing. Men and women in his employ never forgot the respect and care he showed for them and their families. When Craig asked me to write the foreword to this book, I was humbled. In reading the submissions, I saw my dad and myself in so many places. The essays caused me to reflect on the kind of dad I have been to my own son, and the kind of grandfather I now can be to a beautiful baby boy. In some important ways, I graded myself in the early years of fatherhood as coming up short of the standards that my father had established. But time, experience, and reflection about my dad helped me get better over the years. Critical was my wife, Stephanie, who would always sit me down to force me to reflect on the patient values of my father and remind me how I needed to always be more like him. Fatherhood is not easy, and none of us are perfect. We learn, with our children beside us, how to get better. If we are self-aware, curious, listen carefully, and focus on being relentlessly kind to everyone, we get better. Sometimes we are all those things to others, yet we fail to apply the same values to those we love the most, our children. Our children change and grow with exponential speed. Our responsibility is to keep up with them in an effort to understand and guide them. The essays that Craig has compiled are full of wisdom regarding the most noble title that a man can have on this earth, Dad. As I read each one, the nostalgia for my dad grew deeper. When I reflected on the values the authors wrote about, there were so many common themes. Humility, kindness, and unconditional love resonate the most. Finally, I thought what a better world we would have if we approached not just fatherhood, but all aspects of our lives with a servant's heart. The way Davis Love III describes his dad. I sincerely hope you enjoy the Dad Advice Project. George J. Tenet. Peter Hill. Children, three daughters aged 42, 33, and 31. Career, founder and owner of Golf Course Management Company. Prelude to Parenting. 35 years ago, on learning that I was engaged to marry a beautiful woman who was the mother of a precious 5-year-old, my longtime college buddy quipped, "Well, at least you know there'll be one good parent." Stepfatherhood has had its advantages and been a blessing. Memories are theirs, not yours. We can all recall a vivid early childhood memory. It may be a place, an event, or a person. One of mine was the angst as a 5-year-old deciding between a Memorial Day choice of riding on a fire engine in the town parade or attending a day game at Yankee Stadium. Brutal. Every moment in a child's life is the opportunity for them to create a memory. Your actions as a parent are the input. Their memories are the output. So everything you do on any day in their upbringing can have a lasting effect. Your kids will serve up plenty of theirs to you as they grow up. The mother is everything. I'm a father to 3 engaging and beautiful adult daughters. I'm certain I've been important to them in many respects as a father, but my wife was and remains the center of their universe. It's a beautiful thing to watch the magic between a mother and daughter throughout their journey as infants, youths, adolescents, young adults, and young mothers. For the dad, done right, it's a very fulfilling, best supporting award-winning role. Alien, release my child. This is a powerful phrase that will prove useful when enunciated clearly and calmly as you stand face to face and gently place your hands on the shoulders of your teenager. The gift that's important. Gifts matter a ton to children. Sure, they love to receive them, but your kids will be unintentionally brilliant at giving them too. My lifetime favorite gift was from my 4-year-old daughter. In the middle of the unwrapping mayhem on a Christmas morning, she approached and stood before me in her unicorn pajamas and handed me a loosely wrapped and excessively scotch-taped gift about the size of a softball. Clearly, her handiwork in wrapping. Her eyes locked on mine as she watched me unwrap her Christmas gift to me. The gift? It was my own bedside table Mickey Mouse alarm clock I used every day. She knew I liked it, and showing that was important to her. I can't believe I never noticed. Raising kids is hard enough. Watching your kids raise their kids poses its own challenges. My mother and my in-laws had the good sense to not offer advice, coach, and just plain stay out of the way as my wife and I raised our 3 daughters. I'm sure they bit their tongues often enough and didn't agree with our methods and approaches along the way, but they kept their opinions to themselves. I never really noticed the wisdom of their approach until coming face to face with the dynamic of my kids parenting my grandkids. Mum's the word. On-the-job training. In raising kids, we don't have the luxury of a dress rehearsal. This journey is 100% real time. You're going to screw some things up. When you do, be contrite and proactive. 1 year into my marriage, my 7-year-old stepdaughter was preparing for the first day of first grade, which included gathering school supplies and the like. As a near-new step-parent, I made an executive decision that we could box up a dozen of the used crayons from the bin of a few hundred on hand and not have to buy yet another box of new crayons. My wife was not in agreement with this move, but let it play out. We met our daughter at the bus stop as she returned from the first day. She was in tears. Everyone else in her class had new crayons on that first day, but not her. I felt like a heel. In consideration, my darling daughter has received a new box of crayons in her Christmas stocking every year for the past 35 years. Rick Barton. Children, 35-year-old son, 33-year-old daughter. Career, practicing attorney, adjunct professor of health, law, and policy. Craig, thanks so much for asking me to do this. I used Yom Kippur morning to write this, as it is the day to reflect on all things important. It took me a while to finish. Here is what I would say. My son Justin and daughter Rachel are 35 and 33, respectively. This means I have a lot of years, both being a father and watching others in that role. I cannot and will not speak to others' experience, nor do I presume to advise others. I humbly write this as Justin and Rachel's dad, how I have approached it, and what it has meant to me. I offer it particularly for those just starting out on this very daunting journey. As I grew up, there was never a question in my mind whether I wanted to be a father. When I married Elaine, at the core of my excitement about our future together was knowing what a wonderful mother she would be and what great partners we would most likely be as parents. How did I know this? Because we started dating while working together as camp counselors at a Jewish day camp in Pasadena, California. When I say work together, I mean literally. It was my third year as a counselor and her first. They assigned her to work as my counselor in training. As such, our first experiences together were surrounded by and interacting with children, a group of 6 to 7-year-olds who called themselves the Hustler Bustlers. Now, I get that Elaine and I are beyond extreme as an example, but I don't discount the gift of knowing her love of children as part of my wanting us to spend our lives together. It was a great thing to have clarified, but I knew many who were not as clear. One of my dear friends said she would never want children. She went a long distance before changing her mind and is a wonderful mom of 2 adult boys. The point is that the topic of having children is something we should think about a lot before we take it on. For me, fatherhood has been, at the same time, an incredibly joyful and wonderfully challenging endeavor. The joy has come in so many little moments that are so intimate and so profoundly connected in the relationships I maintain with Justin and Rachel. The joys are beyond description, and I can attest to the bursting feeling others describe. I cannot possibly capture 30-plus years of it here. I can say that notwithstanding the constant drumbeat of the terror that others were sure was around the corner with raising children, the terrible twos, the pre-teen years, adolescence, high school, leaving for college, I never, ever found the predictions to be true. Each stage had its own challenges, but there was so much more joy. At the same time, I wonder if at least some of the joy has been simply the relief that whatever I might have catastrophized in my mind did not come to pass. The other day, my wife Elaine and I were with some work colleagues, many of whom are new or about to be new parents. The mother of a beautiful 5-year-old related that her son never crawled on all fours. He went straight from a combat-type backward scoot to standing up and walking at 13 months. She said that before he stood and walked, she was sure there was something horribly wrong with him. Knowing I was to write this, the story seemed so apt. It captures so many different things we experience as parents. Early on, our children are measured by their progress against certain milestones that we are told are the norm. That norm comes not only from science communicated through our doctors, but also in comparisons with other children and their families. Like my work colleague, we all have to fight our way through the doubts, no matter how much reassurance we receive about the size of the bell curve. The first internal debate I remember as I approached fatherhood was nature versus nurture. How much would or could I influence what my kids would ultimately become as adults? I remember thinking it had to be 90% nurture. As they grew up and being a father unfolded, there were so many times when it was clear that my percentage was way off. Exhibit A is that Justin and Rachel could not have been more different as children, and they remain so as adults. I have absolutely no idea what the accurate percentage is, but I do think that focusing on nurturing was the best approach for me. I also think that having a broad definition of nurture, how to nurture, and who to nurture helped a lot. I did not read a lot of articles or books about fatherhood. What reading I did does not stand out, except for one article that talked about the importance of modeling in parenting. No, not the runway type. The author spoke about how much of a child's development is tied to what they observe in us, not just as parents, but in what they observe in us as a people. How we treat them is not the only thing they react to or can be impacted by. I think my lowest moments as a father were when my temper got the best of me in their presence. An early lesson was Justin, at about 2, repeating effing a-hole at a dinner with friends, because that was exactly what I had called a driver who had changed lanes in front of me while driving him to daycare. I also remember Rachel telling me how scared she was when I lost my cool at someone else. I learned and tried, but still, too many times I failed to understand that their feelings of being safe was impacted by how they perceived me interacting with the world. As for nurturing them, I will not spend much time, only because my assumption is that anyone listening to this has already thought about or fashioned their own way of creating a connection with their children. My favorite moments as a father were figuring out what I could share with them as just father and son, or father and daughter. With Justin, it has always been sports. Back in the day, ESPN's SportsCenter was a 30-minute show at 8:30 p.m. It came just before bedtime, and it was absolutely sacred as Justin's and my time. With Rachel, it was movies. She and I would go by ourselves on weekends, and we shared this thing of enjoying movies no matter how many times we watched them together later on TV. Finding those sacred spaces with them as individuals was such a wonderful thing to develop and remains a core aspect of our present relationships. In my case, the doubting about my parenting in no way ended with early childhood. In each stage of Justin and Rachel's journey, Elaine and I were challenged in making decisions that we were told would be life-altering. Decisions about whether we would both work, daycare, where to live, early education, private versus public school, and so on, were all treated as though all of our lives depended on the right answer, as if there were one. In each decision, we were confronted by unending data about the impact of these choices on children generally. Added to that were the decisions and experiences of our peers. The latter, however unwittingly, added to our angst through their articulation of what were, for them, very strong arguments supporting decisions that differed from ours. Because these decisions seemed so monumental, one of the greatest challenges was to just find comfort in what we were doing. Against the aforementioned backdrop, my only true contribution to this effort may be solely a function of my age. It is this: everyone turned out just fine. Indeed, better than just fine. Today, I look at Justin and Rachel and their peers, and I just marvel at how wonderful they all are after having traveled so many different paths. None of their close peers walked or talked at the same time. They were raised in homes where the differences in parenting philosophies and practices from ours cannot be overstated. Some had parents who both worked, some had moms stay home, and some had dads stay home. Some had parents divorce, and some faced other types of profound tragedy. Some of them went to the best preschools, religious schools, private schools, colleges, and on and on. Looking back, I think one of the best things Elaine and I did was to filter out all of the angst-producing data and opinions. Instead, we focused on Rick, Elaine, Justin, and Rachel in our decision-making. I use the word filter as opposed to shutting out data and opinions, because there is so much useful information out there. But at the end of the day, finding comfort and confidence in being a parent was ultimately about knowing our children and what worked best for us. All of the aforementioned goes to the importance in my mind of the gift you give your children when you nurture yourself. Not in a self-indulgent sense, but in the keeping yourself healthy sense. When they are young, feeling loved and safe is at the core of their needs. Children need to know their world will maintain its stability. And I always felt that staying healthy, pursuing a happy life, and being a happy person was a very important part of reassuring them and making them feel loved. I think I was at my worst as a parent when I was out of balance in my life professionally. I have been fortunate to have a very successful career as a trial lawyer, and it has yielded wonderful things professionally and financially. It has allowed us to travel and create experiences that have made it easier to keep us close to our kids, to be sure. But it also subjected me to a great deal of stress and put me in the hospital on a couple of occasions. This created a lot of unnecessary worry for my family. I think we stayed so close because I worked at always keeping them first and being present for them, no matter how hard I was working at my job. But I also know how much my kids worried and still worry, and that never felt good. Today, I am in the midst of a transition out of the full-time practice of law. I keep Justin and Rachel advised of all developments in my transition, precisely because I want them to know how much I love them and how important they are to me. Nurturing my relationship with Elaine was also a very important part of our life. We routinely had weekends and longer trips away as a couple. It was a great way to allow Justin and Rachel time with their uber-crazy grandparents, stories of which still create hilarity. But it also helped Elaine and I as parents. Making sure we stayed connected helped a great deal in the team sport reality of parenting. Beyond that, I always felt that maintaining our health as a couple was similar to keeping healthy as individuals. We felt that demonstrating our commitment to each other was an important message to send in terms of how much we love them. Justin's message to us at his wedding was about Elaine and me as a couple and how much our approach to marriage influences his relationship with Jess. Something I will never forget. A few more tidbits, if I can be so presumptuous. One is how some of the tools and advice we gave our children when they were little continued to have value long after our kids were all grown up. In all honesty, most of these came from Elaine, and my success as a father was in many ways the result of just watching what she did and putting her approaches to use when I needed them. Use your words is a particularly meaningful one. The message was, get in touch with your feelings and tell me what you want or need. Sometimes, the subtitle was, why are you embarrassing me in this store by throwing a fit? These people are going to report me. I remember this so vividly, playing out the summer before Justin started college at UCLA. He and Elaine were clashing, in great part, over the pace of him getting his things organized. The more he delayed, the more Elaine grew frustrated. And the more Elaine got frustrated, the more Justin fought back by delaying. In finally discussing it calmly, they both figured out they were expressing the same angst in opposite directions. Elaine's need for him to get organized was her way of dealing with the deep sadness she was feeling about his leaving. She felt she needed to have the work part of the process out of the way so she could focus on processing her emotions. Justin's avoidance was for the same reason. Every time he went to get organized, it brought the reality of his leaving to the surface. It took their mutual use of words, calm words, to get them to an understanding of each other, and while not a father story, it was one of those moments that just stuck with me. Tied to all of the aforementioned was the need to rethink who should be making whom proud in the relationship. I tried, too many times unsuccessfully, to avoid making their accomplishments and disappointments my own. I also learned that they valued, and still value, being proud of me. Rachel's most recent birthday card to me in July, expressing her admiration for how I have cared for my mom as she fights dementia, was unbelievably moving for me. In my 35 years at this, what is clear is how constant change is in the relationships with children. Their birth starts a slow and inevitable process of eventual separation from us. Our biggest challenge as a young parent is in decoding, figuring out what they are really communicating when they are crying.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?